Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan. And actually, Mark Holland in for Lynette once again this week. I filled in last week as scheduled, and she was supposed to be back, but she is stranded in Italy. Nice place to be stranded.
Poor baby.
Yeah, no kidding.
Are you sure she didn't plan that?
I wonder about that.
Well, we've got Dr. Umat with us today, and Dr. Mixon is out of town, but we have Dr. Dan Nelson.
Good morning.
First time we've actually met, Dan.
Yes. It's a pleasure.
And
good to see you.
I mean, it's interesting, you know, as time passes. I was the new girl, new kid on the block, and now I'm the veteran in this room.
Yeah, that's right. You're the old hand.
I'm the old
hand. Old in quotes.
Okay.
Old in quotes. I didn't quite mean it that way.
Yeah, we better be careful there. It's actually interesting that this came up today, and I wasn't thinking about this, but I've been with Longevity now 13 years. And yesterday when I walked into my office, the team had a huge banner with balloons and flowers for me. And I was so touched by that. Mm. In this crew now, I'm the oldest, and I literally think of all of them as my kids. But the team is a wonderful team, and I reflected on the fact that I've been here that long. And there was a second reason for the congratulations, which we have alluded to earlier, but, I got voted top 50 women in medicine in Washington State, and then recently, nationally, top 50 women.
Nationally, too. I didn't know that.
My goodness. By women we admire. And actually, it was funny. My team looked at the write-up, and they go, why did you say top 50? You came in 31st. Okay, what am I supposed to say? But, you know, it was just... time to kind of think about what has transpired and what has happened in medicine and over the course of 13 years. Time passes so quickly. I can still remember the first day I came here, and yet now 13 years later, here we are. And you think about the people you have come across, the patients you've seen, the teams that you worked with, and it's been just a wonderful experience. And I said to the team yesterday that life is always up and down, but I would rather be here than anywhere else. And it was just because I have learned so much. You know, as physicians, you come out of medical school thinking, oh, you know everything and you can fix everything. But very early on, you realize that medicine is dynamic. Mm-hmm. Things are changing constantly and you're in flux. And if you don't put on that new cap, and not only just in medicine and what you practice and the drugs you use and how they work, also in your thinking, your EMR systems, they are also brand new. When we were training, this did not exist. So you have to multitask, you have to learn, and you have to adapt to new technology. Some of it makes your life easier, and some of it just takes more time. Mm. I don't know that EMR has made my life easier. I think it's easier to get to stuff, but the face-to-face interaction with the patient is what is compromised in medicine today. Doctors are too busy entering things and data into a computer rather than holding that patient's hand and saying, okay, what can I do for you? You know, the common complaint I get is when my patients come back from their wellness visit is, doctor didn't even touch me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
How can you do a wellness visit and not even touch your patient?
Right.
You know.
Right.
So things things are changing. Some for the better. Some you remember, but then that's the generation gap. We all reflect on what was and what is going to be, and we're nostalgic for what we've lost sometimes, and then we look forward to other things. But evolving is always the key. And as I was thinking about that, I came across an article that Mark, I was telling you about earlier this morning. When I first came here, we used to say, you cannot reverse diabetes. You're stuck with that chronic diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think much about all of the problems that came with diabetes. It was just a given. You know, a diabetic is going to have a shorter lifespan. They are at a higher risk of ulcers and pain and degenerative joint disease and cardiovascular disease and dementia. And that was, people just accepted it. But this week on October 17th, there was a multinational study that published on Medscape, and it's actually a European study, then, and it just said that testosterone replacement can reverse symptoms of type 2 diabetes and reduce risk for chronic disease. Mm. And it was impactful. And I go, well, gosh, for the last 13 years, that's what we've been doing in our clinic. You know, we have men and women, Mark, you asked me that earlier, both men and women on testosterone replacement, because both have these hormones, and these hormones are not just sexuality hormones. They impact on function. Testosterone was made to perform function. When you're younger, you have higher volumes, higher concentrations, higher amounts. As you get older, that amount decreases, and therefore, the function of that hormone is also decreasing, which we now equate to aging. You know, years and years ago, when our lifespan was much shorter than it is today, we didn't pay attention to chronic disease. But then penicillin came along and management of chronic diseases became better. And so now in our lifespan, we have a healthy span, which is all in green, then a chronic disease period, which is all in yellow, and then the end, which is in red. So if you think of this spectrum as green, yellow, and red, what you want to do is keep as much of the spectrum in green as possible. Mm. You want to keep yellow to the minimum and definitely the red to the least. But what is happening is the green spectrum is diminishing, the yellow is expanding, and the red is expanding. So think of your life as a spectrum, with the best part of your life being in green. And then when you have a chronic medical problem that is being treated, hypertension, diabetes, whatever it is, now you're in yellow, now you're under supervision, now you're in surveillance. And then finally, something will tip you over into red. And the question is, in that span, what do you want? You know, I've been reflecting on this. The difference between health and disease is a very fine line. And it will take very little to tip you over into the yellow and into the red. And the question is, what will it take to stay in the green? And what can you do to keep you as strong and as healthy for as long as possible? And that's what this is all about. And that's what gives me joy. It has kept me here for 13 years. And every day brings something that I look forward to. This week in my office, I've been taking care of a young lady. She's in her 60s. And she's been with me, I think, about 8-9 years now. Mm. And she brought me a DEXA scan report, and she was smiling, and she said, here, I got this done. She's now out of state, so she comes in for her annual visits, and we talk on the phone. I got this done, and I want you to see it. And she was smiling, and sure enough, the bone density, both in the spine and in the hip, has improved over time. Wow. And she's not on drugs. She's on testosterone. She's on estrogen. She's on progesterone. She takes supplements. It's not, these are prescription hormones, but over the course of time, these have depleted in her. We're replacing them to a more youthful level. She's maintaining her quality of life. She's active, and she's, no other risk factors. She monitors herself carefully. watches her diet, does all the right things, and when the investigations are done, you go, wow, for a normal postmenopausal woman in her mid-60s, if she's not doing all these things, her bone density would be declining over time because that's just natural. It's just normal. Once you hit menopause and you lose estrogen and testosterone levels, which are low to begin with, are also diminishing, you don't have the raw material to help build healthier bone no matter what you do. Yes, you do exercise. Yes, you walk and you do weight-bearing exercises to maintain muscle, but the hormones aren't there. Therefore, a postmenopausal woman will develop osteopenia and osteoporosis. Without hormone replacement, she cannot maintain bone density. And so when I saw that, it's just heartwarming. It's what the hormones should be doing as she is planning for her future and hopefully, I mean, she has longevity on her side of the family. And so as she is planning for the next 50 years of her life, she wants to be as healthy as possible today so that tomorrow she can be healthy, smart, intelligent. And that's what we do. And it just was, you know, this is my week in the office. Somebody brings me a nice report to look at. Somebody else has some issue which we try to solve, you know. So not everybody is always doing the best, but what we do is we put the odds in your favor so that our goal is to help you age better so that you are able to deal with whatever is coming your way and manage it and come out ahead and stronger.
Wow. That was great.
Yeah.
That was a wonderful week.
Really good. She had a great week.
It is a great week in the office.
Well, listen, Dr. Umat, congratulations to being the top 50 female physician in the nation. That is amazing.
Yeah.
And for 13 years, is it, 13 lucky years?
Oh, I don't know. I guess, yeah.
How long have you been doing the radio part?
I still remember the first time Dr. Mixon asked me, and I go, that's never going to happen. What, are you kidding?
and here you are.
Yeah, I think it was about a year after I had joined him.
About a year.
I came in intermittently once in a while. Mm-hmm. And then he spotted the talent.
Well, and then actually.
Got her
in here,
yeah.
Right?
And then he went on sabbatical for a few months, and then I was it. So it was Pete Talbot and me.
Yeah. There you go. Well, Dr. Nelson, you used to host this show on a regular basis as well.
Well, I've been a guest on this show.
Our show, he's been a guest.
Okay.
But he had his own show.
I had my own show, Conquering Your Pain with Dr. Dan Nelson. Mark, I'm sure you've listened to it many times.
Of course he has.
And my good friend Jerry Berg was the co-host, and dear Jerry left our...
That's whose
world.
Place I took was Jerry.
Jerry. And that and some other things going on, I decided not to continue Conquering Your Pain. We'll probably bring it back in some fashion, maybe as a podcast. I had my own show, which I really enjoyed. Same format, basically.
Right.
And Pete Talbot was my producer. Mm. And so it was great. It was pretty successful, if I may say so myself.
Right. And then today, you know, all of our listeners have the opportunity to ask Dr. Dan Nelson any of their questions related to pain. You know, Dan, pain and back pain was the number one cause that took patients to see a medical provider.
Right.
And so many of us are affected by this. Now, I know that, you know, people have multiple avenues, but then as an MD, as a physician, your scope of practice has also increased in how you can help people with chronic pain, definitely acute pain. And I'd love to hear some of the new things that you are doing and can do for pain in terms of, you know, innovations in stem cells or regenerative medicine or PRP therapies that are not built to insurance, but everybody knows they work.
Right. No, well, thank you for that. As an example, the back pain, one of the most common reasons, as you said, Samira, that people go to the doctors for back pain. And back pain is fairly complex, and teasing it out, and I just, you know, I see a patient and, you know, they have back pain. Well, where is it coming from? And really, it's critical because the tools in our vast toolbox are only appropriate if we can figure out where to apply those tools. So these patients are usually people who have already tried physical therapy or chiropractic or massage or acupuncture. So they've tried all the so-called non-invasive things, and then they come to me with chronic back pain or neck pain or any spine-related pain, but any joint pain, really. Just the amount of things that we do compared to when I first started practice, a little bit longer than you, Dr. Umat. If you got to go back a few more years. But it just amazes me sometimes to see what we have at our disposal. We have things where we can treat now spinal stenosis and degenerative disc disease and vertebrogenic pain, which we saw these changes on MRI of people's spines and these what we call modic end plate changes. You can see them around the disc, and we knew that was a source of pain, but we had nothing to do for those patients. And now we have something called Intracept procedure, where we can go in with a very minimally invasive procedure and do a radiofrequency ablation of the basovertebral nerve. My good friend Ray Baker left this area to become the chief medical officer of this company down in Southern California, and it has been a game changer. And that's just one
wow.
tool in the toolbox. It's just the information available to us has just increased exponentially in the last 10-15 years, so it's been remarkable.
Okay, Dr. Nelson, we'll hear more about that after the break, and hopefully some calls from you. If you're listening today, you have a question for Dr. Nelson or Dr. Umat, call in your questions now at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Back with more Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics, in just a moment. Well, we want to help you with those aches today. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Samira Umat with us today, and also Dr. Dan Nelson. Dr. Mixon is off in Houston somewhere.
That's
what is he
right.
learning in Houston?
He's at a conference, and he's been texting me about all that he's hearing in the conference. He was actually quite excited about some of the changes that we can help with, maybe, potentially, in aging people with brain function. You know how we used to say that you can't teach an old dog new tricks? Well, that's not true. We know that. And we've known that for a very long time, because the brain is plastic and you can, but sometimes it requires a little bit of effort. And he came across a clinic that is doing something quite innovative. So we'll talk more about that when he comes back. We always said that, you know, once you've had injury to the brain, those neurons are dead and they cannot regenerate. So you've basically lost that function. But we discovered, and actually I was just coming out of residency when this came out, that you can. The brain is plastic. Neuroplasticity is real. And you can really regenerate new neurons that will perform the function of the part of the brain that is not functioning. Mm. And in neuroplasticity, this is huge. And the question is, how do you do it? What is safe? And innovation and technology has advanced so much. I was looking at something in AI and regenerative technologies where they were training a monkey to do play a game. And then when they took the lever away, the monkey could actually play the game with the brain without using his hand and the lever to do it.
Because the monkey.
Yeah, they were showing this on a video. It was incredible. Mm. So I'm actually fascinated with innovation and where technology is going. But neuroplasticity is something that is incredible. So Dr. Mixon is listening to lectures about neuroplasticity and many, many, many other things. And when he comes back next week, we will talk about what he has learned in Houston. And then he's also told us he's going to the Buck Institute again in December, where memory is the big focus lifespan. Memory is the big focus there. And he has talked about things like rapamycin and other regenerative technologies that we do offer in our clinic. And, you know, that's how we stay at the cutting edge. He goes around, does the research all over the country, and then comes back and says, okay, let's talk about this. And it's fascinating, because you do need somebody at the helm who is kind of thinking ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once you get back here, you're just busy in your day-to-day routine. And to carve out time to plan, well, we are working on new protocols. For example, we do have DNA testing we offer in the clinic now. We're starting doing IV therapies. We are doing erectile dysfunction treatments, BPH treatments. So, you know, I feel like our scope has expanded a lot in the last few years, mm-hmm. and I'm excited about that. We're in a brand new office, huge facility, absolutely beautiful. And if all of you have not come back to the Kirkland office, you really should come and see it. Give us a little bit more time. We're not quite finished yet. We will host an open house. When we do, we will advertise
same
it.
Location?
We will have you guys come over there. Not the same location, Dr. Nelson. New office in Kirkland. And actually, it's not quite finished yet, but our patients can come in, and we are able to do everything that we would do if we were finished. So all the services are available. The team is all there. We're just walking a lot more because it's a lot more space, so we have to mm-hmm. go back and forth. But overall, light, bright, airy, and looking forward to, you know, doing everything we can do. We're not fighting for rooms like we did. We're not falling over each other, turning around the corner.
A little cozy in the old.
It was very cozy, very affectionate. But we are still. We're not cozy. We're big now, but we're still very affectionate and very caring.
Well, we've got some calls rolling in, and be okay. able to take your call at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. If you have a question for the doctors, Dr. Dan Nelson today and Dr. Samira Umat. First off question, we have Bob on line one in Snohomish. He has an actual question about whether you can take patients from out of state and what would bring that question on. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
So this is for Dr. Nelson. I'm a patient. My main, both my wife and I are patients of Dr. Nelson. But because of the success of the stem cells in the shoulders and the hips and the knees on my wife, people have asked us, like one of my friends has had his knee amputation or knee replacement, and he has way more pain than he used to. But his brother now, to come from New York to Dr. Nelson. Is that something they can do?
Hey. Good morning, Bob. So your brother has already come or is coming?
No, it's not my brother. It's a friend of mine. His brother.
Got it. Okay. So could, Bob, is your question, can we treat people from out of state? Is that it?
So how would you do somebody that lives in New York State that would come in and do stem cells on both their knees?
Oh, well, first of all, we could do a remote telehealth visit before he even comes to see us, which is nice. You know, that was one of the few benefits of the COVID era, is that the telehealth thing became an everyday phenomenon, right? So we could do initial assessment, the telehealth, and arrange for appropriate imaging, including x-rays, MRI ahead of time, and be able to review those. So that's probably not a big hurdle. We've had people come from Canada and various places around the country, so really not a big issue.
Well, what about insurance, though? Can a citizen of New York City be able to bill a physician, or can a physician in Washington State bill a patient who has residence in New York?
Yeah, that in most cases it has not been an issue.
Oh, good.
So, and Bob, as you know, everything we do, all the consultations, any tests we order, any imaging, all that's typically covered by your medical insurance or anybody's medical insurance in most cases.
Okay, so but where you live doesn't matter then?
Doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Now, there's a few restrictions. My PA, Sarah, who's wonderful, apparently a PA can't do a telehealth visit,
okay.
which I think is kind of ridiculous. I mean, she's totally capable, but that barrier is in place. But as a MD physician, it's a non-issue.
To your office.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. A question for Dr. Umat. You talk about genetic testing on prostate cancer. And the genetic test comes back 10%, that you have a 10.82% chance if you'll die of it in 10 years if you do nothing. And if you do the prostatectomy, 4.82%, or radiation. And then if you do the androgen therapy, it goes down to 2.8.
Okay.
Is there a recommendation on that, or is it 10.82, wait and see number?
You know, that's a tough one because you have to kind of think about what your chances are, how aggressive that mutation is, and what will happen. Because what you're saying to me is indicating that if the patient does have testosterone replacement, then the risk for recurrence is high, or occurrence in the first place is much higher. So that really is limiting, and there are very small percentage of people that fall into that category. But as you've heard us say on this show, androgen deprivation really makes a huge impact on patients' quality of life. It is necessary in some cases where the genetics are such that the therapy can cause testosterone, but what we found is that in a lot of patients, there is a threshold beyond which testosterone doesn't cause any damage. But below that, you have to keep the patient to prevent that cancer from multiplying and from reproducing. So I would basically have this would be a question for the geneticist at the hospital to kind of talk to you about whether you're a good candidate for hormone replacement therapy or not for quality of life, if that's your question.
So the question is, this was a test from a biopsy at the 10.82. If that 10.82 is your chances of dying within 10 years, mm-hmm. percentage 10. Mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. the question is, do you do anything at that point?
That's a tough one, you know, because at which point to start with? Is your question, do you want to do replacement therapy or do you want to just wait the 10 years?
The question is do you have the prostate removed or radiated or whatever?
Depends upon your age.
If you don't do anything. If you don't do anything, it's 10.282 chance of dying within 10 years. That's what the genetic test says.
Right.
Statistically.
Correct. It depends upon the age and diagnosis. If at the age a diagnosis is 50, obviously you want to do something because there's a whole lot of length of life left and you can reduce that percentage. If the age a diagnosis is 90, then, you know, you have to kind of think about cost-benefit ratio to quality of life. If you do nothing from 90, you'll make it to 100, maybe even beyond. And in that 10 years, you can do other things to reduce the risk for recurrence, slow the growth. You know, we've talked about resveratrol, we've talked about pomegranate, we've talked about reducing inflammatory foods in the diet. There's a lot written about reducing your risk. So I think it depends upon where you are at the time of diagnosis. What is your expectation over the next 10 years? What is the quality of your life at the time?
75,
hey, Bob.
And I've,
yes. Bob, I'm just going to interject here a little bit. If you really want to do a deep dive on this, I would recommend Dr. Peter Attia's podcast.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with him? He's got a podcast called...
I don't know who that is.
Dr. Peter Attia, A-T-T-I-A, and he does a deep dive in this whole subject about a month ago with one of his colleagues at Northwestern University, and it was fascinating. It goes into all, and it's pretty pretty granular. He goes into a lot of detail, but I thought it was just an amazing discussion of this and all implications around prostate issues and prostate cancer. So, Bob, I know you're a bright guy, so you probably could listen to that, take notes. You could probably give me a lecture afterwards. No, check him out, Peter Attia.
So, just for information, I'm sending a letter to Dr. Nelson with 4 referrals for stem cells. So.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Okay. Need to take a quick break. Opens up a line for you at 800.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bob, and good luck to you.
You'll get a Christmas card.
And keep us posted, okay?
Call in your questions for Dr. Nelson, Dr. Umat at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Back in just a few moments.
After driving out the memory of the way things might
Well, welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. It's Dr. Nelson in for Dr. Mixon today, and Dr. Umat, who's always here, it seems like, these last times I've come. And your questions today at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Call in your medical questions right now. We actually had an off-air question. Denise in Linwood wanted to know about Biosalt and how it works with the gallbladder. She maybe just had her gallbladder taken out. What do you think of Biosalt? Who wants to take that one on?
Well, okay, let's talk about this for a second. So the function of bile is to help absorb fats, okay? Bile emulsifies fats. It absorbs and digests fat, and it also absorbs fat-soluble vitamins. So the bile is stored in the gallbladder. Now, sometimes there's inflammation in the gallbladder, and these crystallize into stones. They can cause pain. And in those cases, some patients have to have their gallbladders removed. So then the question is, well, how do you use bile to emulsify fats and absorb fat-soluble vitamins? And there are some bile salts that mm-hmm. do help, you know, ox bile. And I don't regularly use these, so I don't know a whole lot about them. But definitely there are salts that you can use that helps emulsify with fats and therefore absorb and just fats and also fat-soluble vitamins. Those are A, D, E, and K.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I have to, and this is not my area of expertise, but I have to say, I know a lot of patients who've had their gallbladder removed, and I'm not sure I know any of them that are required to take bile salt less supplement.
So as MDs, we never prescribe them.
No, I have
never done that, but I work with a lot of naturopathic physicians, and I have come across many patients who do take them, and they feel that it helps them improve their digestion.
Okay.
Now, you know, when we measure labs, we do measure for vitamin D levels. So A, D, E, and K, right. D is a fat-soluble vitamin. So if you're not able to absorb enough vitamin D and not get adequate amounts of it, then we know that it's going to compromise a lot of function.
That's a problem, for sure.
That's a huge... So how do you get enough vitamin D, and what do you do? So are there some salts or ox bile, I've seen these, so many people take them, that helps you digest fat better. Mm-hmm. So you really do have to do a deeper dive into stool analysis, and we do that to look to see whether they are either excreting it all or they're absorbing it. And then we also do a micronutrient test, which is a nutritional analysis, to see what are the levels of these vitamins. And if you're not absorbing them adequately, then we will either look into the gallbladder issue or increase doses or give an IV or something to increase levels. So yes, I do know that MDs don't prescribe them because I've never prescribed them, but in my practice over here, I do work with a lot of naturopathic physicians, and I have seen patients that have benefited from using bile salts after they have had a cholecystectomy.
Okay. Interesting.
Okay.
Did not know that.
Yeah, my sister had gallbladder issues, and we served her sausage lasagna one time, and she just looked at that and said, "No way!" Because so there's obviously certain foods that you can't, if you're struggling with your gallbladder, don't
there
have.
You go.
There you go.
But people, patients learn, right?
Right.
They learn what to avoid. They know to eat smaller portion sizes. They know not to eat a large fatty meal. Like patients with gout, they know that if they eat a lot of red meat, they will have joint pain. You learn by experience. But in this case, I do know that he's not here anymore. When I first came, he was one of the physicians that worked with us, and a lot of his patients were on ox bile salts, and they swore by it. And they would come back and go, you know, where I know he told me, but where would I get it? And I go, I have no clue where to send you for it.
Right.
But obviously, it really help them.
Okay, let's move on to our next question. That opens up a line for you, too, at 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Your questions for Dr. Nelson, Dr. Umat today. We have Lori in Bothell on line one, and she has a question about hormones. Lori, what's your specific question for the doctors?
Good morning, Lori.
Hi, Hi, how are you?
Good.
Of course, I'm sure you know that Suzanne Summers passed away from cancer.
And thank you for bringing that up, actually. Yes.
Yeah, and so I'm on the bioidentical hormones, and I kind of got scared because she had been on the bioidentical hormones for quite a and I was wondering, do they really cause cancer?
Yeah, great question. So
I know that you've talked about it in the past.
Yeah. So forgive me for going into this history a little bit, but this is important. You know, when I started doing regenerative medicine, I did not know that Suzanne Summers was engaged in it or involved in it. And I went to my first conference because somebody had mentioned that, you know, there's a lot to learn here. And I was intrigued. And the hall was maybe 30% full. And then all of a sudden, you know, the hall started filling up. People started coming in. And I had my bag next to my chair. And as it was filling up, I said, oh, and the lady came in and she goes, is somebody sitting there? And I moved my bag and the hall was full to capacity. The reason was the next speaker was Suzanne Summers. It was full to capacity. And these people that wore T-shirts and came in, you know, casual clothes to give lectures were all suited up. They were wearing ties and blazers and jackets and photo shoots were going on. And this was one of my first exposures. And I was happy to see her there because by then I had seen her books on HRT. She was a pioneer in bringing bioidentical hormones and alternative therapies to the forefront of public knowledge.
Absolutely.
She was a huge influence in that. She has actually also come to our Pacific Northwest, and she gave a talk over here for somebody, and she talked about her experience. She was a pioneer and a proponent for bioidentical hormones. She talked about her own experience with breast cancer. And unfortunately, we lost her on Sunday last week to breast cancer. And I was disappointed to hear that. I was sorry. And so my sympathies go out to her and her family. Her husband wrote a beautiful thing about her. And, you know, she's just a very unique lady, not scared to talk about what was going on in her life. So let's talk about your question about breast cancer and bioidentical hormones. See, estrogen, if estrogen caused cancer, then every woman that has estrogen would have breast cancer. But no, we don't. So there are different types of estrogens in our body. And then we have a genetic makeup. And sometimes when the cells divide and they increase and they basically, you know, increase their cell division inside the organ and they expand and grow, and they can cause breast cancer. But those cells that are already in the tissue, they are sensitive to estrogen. So it's not that estrogen caused the breast cancer, but once you have the growth, those estrogen cells, performing cells, are immortalized, and they are basically sensitive to more estrogen, and they grow because of that immortalization of the cancerous cells. So when that happens, we have to step back and say, okay, what do we do for this patient? Do we stop all estrogen therapy? And what they found is when they take out the cancerous lesion and when they stop all estrogen therapy, obviously there's no secondary cancerous growth and no recurrence. So then anti-estrogen therapies post-prostate cancer became very popular. And they still are to date, where we basically deplete all estrogen from the body for many, many years. However, this impacts on the life of a woman, and not every woman needs to have that aggressive therapy. So we individualize cases. We are very careful about trying to reduce all other risk factors. We recognize that estriol does not increase risk for cancer, whereas other estrogens might. But we also know that testosterone can be used to help women with bone and brain, and indeed postmenopausal symptoms that they may be experiences when the estrogen levels are depleted. So it's not that every woman that has had breast cancer will go on estrogen or on bioidentical hormones. We do look at the whole person, and we try to stratify and see whether we can use other things. So testosterone being the classic example, I would probably not do that right off the bat, but I would consider it, and I work closely with the oncologist to get clearance for when the patient can use hormone replacement again. I have women in my practice that were not allowed to use hormones, and then I have some that were allowed to use hormones. So it has to be individualized, but what we're trying to do at all times is reduce risk for recurrence. So we would look at general functional aspects of life, you know, your weight, what are the stressors are you, what are the causes of hormone, of the cancer, and we try to minimize those, and we try to work on diet and lifestyle and other things that will help with reducing risk for recurrence.
Okay.
Does that help?
I just wanted to stop all my hormones because I've never had cancer. So I was getting nervous, and I go November 8th for my mammogram, and I thought, oh, what if it shows up? And then, you know, because I've been on the hormones, so I just don't know if I should keep going or if I should stop or...
Yeah, again...
I'm nervous. That's why I was just curious.
You know, I understand your nervousness, and rightly so, but one case should not help you make your own decision about your own health. It depends upon what
right.
your personal risk factors are, what has happened in your family, and what are you trying to achieve, and how much did they help you or did not help you. If you speak to your provider about your own personal case, they can then help you figure this out. Because if there is a high risk for you, they may then want to change the composition of the hormones that they're giving you. That is possible to make it safer for you. Okay, we can do estrogen metabolism studies. There are companies that do urine tests and blood tests that look at how your body is breaking down your estrogens and which kind of metabolites are you making. Are you making the 5-4 hydroxy or the 16 alpha hydroxy? Because some of those, the 4 is very high risk for cancer. And so you can ask them to do these tests so that we can risk stratify for you personally. And then you can look at other treatments. And I'll tell you one thing, Dr. Rebecca Glazer, she's an MD, she's a breast surgeon in Dayton, Ohio. She has done tremendous work on breast cancer and testosterone therapy. She has not only relieved symptoms of postmenopause in women that couldn't use hormones, she has reduced recurrence of breast cancer by using testosterone therapy alone and in high doses. So not all hormones are bad. Not everybody needs to stop them. But yes, we have to look at individual risk factors and reduce those risk factors for you.
Okay.
Okay, so keep taking the hormones until you talk to the doctor. Get the mammogram done. Screening is very, very important. Stay on top of your screenings, okay?
Yes. And I also wanted to tell Dr. Nelson that I took my daughter to your clinic about a week and a half ago, and Sarah was just... perfect.
Oh.
We love you very much.
And Sarah's my PA, and she is.
Thank you, Dr. Nelson.
Oh, thank you for that. She is
really
wonderful. That's true.
Thanks, Lori. Okay.
Yeah. And my daughter is great. Okay. Thank you
very
much.
All right.
That's
thanks,
great.
Lori.
Thank you so much.
You can call in
and
your questions at 800-465-8770. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be back in just a few moments with Dr. Nelson and Dr. Umat taking your questions. Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Nelson in today, as well as Dr. Umat, taking your questions at 800-465-8770. Before we get to our next call, you were both kind of bemoaning the fact that often bad information gets out there about hormones or anything else and causes great damage.
It really does. You know, Suzanne went around the country finding experts on topics and interviewing them and writing about them and then publishing that data so that, or writing her books so that you know, you and I or general people could read about that and see, okay, you know, and then in the beginning, I remember when I first, after my board certification, when I started practicing regenerative medicine, I would have people come into my office with her books and they had highlighted, underlined, and they would ask me, when are you going to do this for me? I mean, sometimes it's very difficult to remember those times now, but I'm talking about 15 years ago when I started doing this. Nobody would say it's okay to give testosterone therapy to a woman. Who gave testosterone to women in those days?
Nobody did.
And even though I was trained to do it, I was petrified. I still remember the first time I spoke to a woman about testosterone, and she looked at me, and there was a look of relief on her face, and she said, I was waiting for you to bring that up. And I was like, oh my God, she knows about it.
So
I recognize that not only is it that people who know about this will come to you, because most people don't know anything, but they want the new things that are being written about, talked about. And when I started replacing her with testosterone, it really impacted on her life, and it taught me never to take anything for granted, but to talk, to educate. Education was my purpose, and then it is up to the patient to say yay or nay. But if they don't know, what are they going to say? You have to really educate them, and that's what Suzanne did. And that's what, Dan, you and I were talking about, that in the 1990s, when the Women's Health Initiative study was first published, you know, they didn't go to the doctors first. They just published it on the media first.
Right.
And what happened was, when women started reading that, everybody was calling their primary care providers. The phones were nonstop. And everybody stopped writing for birth control pills. Mm-hmm. Now, the number one prescription in those days was birth control pills. Every woman, because of the women's revolution, was on it. And all of a sudden, the prescriptions plummeted to nothing, because they all said, oh, estrogen causes breast cancer. The Women's Health Initiative study was halted early because they found that people taking birth control pills were getting increased risk for breast cancer. Well, after this whole thing happened in the early 1990s, 10 years later, 2002 now, Fred Hutch was involved in another study where, over the last 10 years, they had looked at this data more closely, and they realized it was not the estrogen. In fact, estrogen, women taking estrogen alone did not get breast cancer, but it was the synthetic progestin, the medroxyprogesterone acetate, which was derived from a pregnant horse's urine, that increased the risk for breast cancer in these women. So women on estrogen alone did not get breast cancer. Women on combination estrogen with medroxyprogesterone acetate were getting breast cancer. In fact, what they found, that women on estrogen reduced the likelihood of breast cancer by 30% if they got them in the 10-year window right after menopause. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge switch.
Right.
But the original damage is still done. And how many years later now, decades later, everybody
still
says
hear people talking
estrogen
about
causes
that.
Breast cancer.
We were kind of bemoaning the fact during the break that these bad studies come out, not studies that were in error, and they were ultimately refuted. But that bad news, kind of alarmist, those vapors continue to permeate the medical community.
Absolutely, they do.
Forever. And it's hard to dispel that. We have the same thing in my, I'm a pain management specialist. There's a study that came out years ago that the compression fractures that older ladies get, men too,
And on postmenopausal women,
with
osteopenia and osteoporosis,
so
get compression fractures.
And this study came out and said that kyphoplasties, which I do too, which is a very elegant, simple procedure too, and these women are in terrible pain. And we do a 15-minute procedure in the office called kyphoplasty, where we put bone cement back in the bone, restore the height of the bone, and internally fix the fracture. And these women, it's amazing. And this study came out. One of the studies was out of UW.
Okay.
And it was a terribly flawed study. But you trying to get rid of the stench of that study, it still lingers. Even though it's been refuted, you know, there's been 30 studies since that refuted the,
sure.
their data. It was a flawed study from
yeah.
the beginning. Kyphoplasty is the best way to treat people with compression fractures, and I still get primary care doctors referring to that study
yeah.
from 20 years ago.
Yes, yes,
and it's
yes.
like, oh my gosh, you know.
Oh, for sure.
And it's very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, similarly, you know, it's the story about prostate cancer and testosterone. When Dr. Huggins originally wrote about testosterone and prostate cancer, there was this phrase that he coined that, you know, is in our brains. It's embedded in our brain, and it said that testosterone replacement adds fuel to fire, to gasoline to the fire, and you're just going to inflame that cancer. And we don't forget it. It's there. We always go. And everybody still asks about that. So, in fact, Dr. Abraham Morgenthaler was one of the pioneers. He's a urologist out of Harvard, and he has talked about how this was a flawed study. And I was at a conference the same conference that Dr. Mixon is at right now, where he was the keynote speaker, and he got a standing ovation, and he talked about his journey in urology and in testosterone replacement mm-hmm. therapy. And he said when he first realized that testosterone does not cause prostate cancer, he was actually petrified, because he was in the library at Harvard. He talks about it to the archives mm-hmm. of Harvard. And he said he had this vision that the Harvard police were going to come and put him in handcuffs and take him to jail. That's the fear. That's the level of fear. You are going against the norm.
Right.
And how dare you? But that study was flawed. And today we're reading testosterone may prevent diabetic complications in men. Well, hello, come on, right? Young men have the highest level of testosterone. Young men do not get prostate cancer. And when your levels are depleting, yes, the incidence of prostate cancer is high. It rises with every decade. It's a very, very slow growing tumor, but it is very rarely caused by testosterone. More often than not, it's something else. And I now have so many patients who have had prostate cancer who are continuing with testosterone therapy. At that same meeting where Dr. Morgenthaler was the keynote speaker, he did give another lecture. He stopped short of saying it, but he said that the research was pointing to the fact that men who had been treated for prostate cancer and who did not have prostate cancer, if they use testosterone replacement therapy, they may actually reduce the incidence of recurrence. So the research was going in that direction at that mm-hmm. time, and we'll have to wait for more publications. But certainly, lack of the hormone compromises quality of life, bone health, mood, sexuality, cardiovascular health, muscle mass. Remember muscle? Hello, muscle, muscle.
Probably healing too, just wound healing.
Well, testosterone is a healing and repair hormone, and actually wound healing is helped by estrogen. But it's such a huge part of being for both men and women. The way we dose it and prescribe it is completely different for the two, but it is a healing and repair hormone. I found it to help with so many aspects of life, but I have to be very careful with how much I give, when do I give it, and how do I give it. And those, and then I monitor for issues, you know, like the lady Lori just asked about estrogen and breast cancer. Well, there are things you can do to find out if she's at risk or not, even if she is on hormone replacement therapy.
Well, maybe some of these things can be determined by the free health analysis appointment that we want to mention to people. It includes two free tests. What happens in these free health analysis appointments, Dr. Umat?
So this is a completely free visit. You come in and we do a blood test, which looks at your hemoglobin A1C, which is the glycosylated hemoglobin, which is what is your risk factor for becoming pre-diabetic or diabetic. As Dr. Nelson mentioned, mentioned here recently, some people just have no clue. And this is completely reversible, and it can change the trajectory of your future. Remember, I started the show by saying the green, yellow, and red zones in your lifespan? Well, this will increase that green zone in your lifespan and cut out the yellow and maybe help you reduce the red. So that's this one test. The other one is basically looking at muscle-to-fat ratio in your body, in your torso, in your arms, and in your legs, and what is the water relationship with all of that. How many calories are you burning? What is your BMI? And what is your visceral fat level? The data is important because visceral fat is pro-inflammatory, and it increases risk for chronic disease. And we want you to have an idea of where you are, because we can help you change this so that you can live healthier. Now, this is just the first step. If after this you agree you want to go proceed, you then pay for a huge panel where we look at many, many different things. And then you spend 1 hour with the physician again, where they will go over your blood tests. And at that time, you have to make a decision whether you want us to take care of you or not.
Okay, well, find out more. Book your appointment right now at 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 1-866-86-YOUNG. You can also schedule your appointment at lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com. There's a clinic near you in Kirkland, Tacoma, and Linwood. Coming up to the top of the hour here, I need to take a quick break.
Mark, before we go to break, I'll give them a little teaser. There's a promotion coming up next month that I want to talk about.
A promotion coming up. We'll find out more about that here in our next hour as we continue with Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Back with your questions for the doctors in just a few moments.